Welcome to the Need to Know podcast from the Wilson Center, a podcast for policymakers available to everyone. Always informative, nonpartisan, and relevant, we go beyond the headlines to understand the trend lines in foreign policy. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Need to Know. I'm your host, John Molesky. This week, we're taking a look at electric vehicles and the supply chains that make their development and manufacturing possible. We'll discuss the concept of vertical integration, the strategy of owning or controlling different stages of an industry's value chain. And for this jam-packed episode, we're joined by not just one guest, not just two, but three very knowledgeable people. So let's get right to it. Joining us is Duncan Wood, who's been on the program before. He's the Wilson Center's Vice President for Strategy and New Initiatives. Also with us, Jasper Jung is Executive Director, Global Strategic Initiatives for Global Public Policy at General Motors. And Sharm Kunjar is GM's Executive Director for EV Raw Materials Center of Excellence. Gentlemen, welcome. Thank you for joining us. So, Duncan, we're going to put the pressure on you to begin this and help someone like me who needs this explained in lay terms. Give us the overview of what we're going to be talking about.
Well, I mean, for the past 3 years here at the Wilson Center, we've been working closely with a diverse group of stakeholders to try to understand what the United States needs to do to effect the transition from the internal combustion engine to the electric vehicle as the predominant mode of transportation here in the United States, North America, and throughout the world. And it turns out that supply chains are not simple. It turns out that supply chains are actually highly complex things, not just being multiple different levels, but of course involving international cooperation and of course considerations not just of cost and efficiency, but also of basic and important values, such as equity and sustainability, transparency, etc. And as we've learned more and more about the electric vehicle supply chain here at the Wilson Center, of course, the panorama, both here in the United States and internationally, has been changing as well. And that's because, you know, we've seen major pieces of legislation being passed, such as the Inflation Reduction Act here in the United States. And of course, we've seen massive investment from the private sector into the electric vehicle supply chain. Both into the sense of the vertical integration that you mentioned in your introductory comments, but also just in the manufacturing capacity that is needed to create this entirely new class of vehicles that will come to dominate the roads. And so if you look at the numbers, it's really quite extraordinary. Our colleague Jay Turner up at Wellesley College has put together a great team that looks at the amount of new investment that's taken place in the United States since the Inflation Reduction Act was passed. And we've seen 92 new projects in the electric vehicle supply chain in the 18 months since the Inflation Reduction Act, totaling $83.4 billion in investment. And that's a huge step forward here. We've also seen shifts in the geopolitical environment. The United States now a lot more concerned about controlling what comes out of China into the United States, and we've seen China reacting as well. Investing not just around the world, but specifically in North America, we're seeing a very strong uptick of Chinese investment in Mexico. So, that's the kind of the issues that we want to talk about today. And those are that gives you an idea of the complexity of what we're dealing with, John.
And definitionally speaking, are we talking about the same thing when we talk about supply chains and value chains?
Pretty much the same thing. Supply chains tends to be a little bit more, complex. We get down into the weeds on the supply chain. But the value chain is that, as you add value to the basic products, the inputs as they come up through and you assemble them, and then gradually you get the final product. On the supply chain, we really do get down into the weeds about all of the different components. And the the approach that we've adopted here at the Wilson Center is not just to look at, the physical elements of this, but also the regulations around it, the infrastructure that we need, and of course, the human capital that is such an essential element of creating an advanced manufacturing sector in this area.
Thank you. Sharma, I want to turn to you. You know, none of us talked about or thought about supply chains. I mean, you did, experts did, but until the pandemic, and suddenly, you know, empty grocery store shelves and other things made us acutely aware of how things get from wherever they come from to us. If you could describe for us sort of the strategy at GM for investment in these chains, from sourcing to manufacturing to advancing new technologies, and what is the competitive advantage to talk about the so-called vertical chain versus the horizontal chain?
No, that's a great question, John. So as you rightly pointed out, right, pandemic was a big wake-up lesson for the entire automotive industry. We suffered through a lot of supply chain related issues, including, you know, the semiconductor crisis that really throttled our vehicle production capacity. So big lessons learned from that was, you know, we needed to understand every link in our supply chain to see where there could be potential bottleneck. So that's when we started thinking about the EV value chain, if you will. And quickly realized that, you know, there's not a lot of investment in the EV value chain outside of China and predominantly Asia, for if you will. So we quickly formed a cross-functional team, and the main purpose of this team was to look into securing our supply that was going to be sustainable, scalable, and cost competitive. So this was done way ahead of IRA being legislated. So we had about probably a year and a half of, leg up, if you will, in working towards this vision of ours. And we also realized, you know, there's not a lot of investment that was happening in the EV value chain, whether it's at the mining sector or the midstream processing level. So the team that we formed includes folks from purchasing and supply chain. That's where I come from. Folks from legal, corp dev, public policy, treasury, comms, and engineering. We all came together with one single purpose, that was to build this EV value chain that will help us grow our vehicle portfolio. And from an economic perspective, having control over the vertical supply chain is necessary. I mean, we feel it's quite essential, especially for the EV growth, because, like I said earlier about bottlenecks and constraints, any one of those could throttle our production capability, right? So controlling the vertical, controlling the value chain all the way upstream from the mine level to cell production is quite critical for us.
Yeah, complex systems are vulnerable to disruptions, the domino effect. Jasper, I want to ask you about the importance of partners and allies to support a robust value chain. You know, on the surface, that rhetorically sounds great, right? But what does that actually look like?
Yeah, thanks, Sean. I mean, for GM, we work with a universe of partners and markets around the world as we work through the investments and the projects and the vertical integration strategy that Sham referenced. And they, working with our allies, working with our partners, working with companies, you know, not just here in the US, but in various markets, really contributes to really is about the reality when we look all the way at the raw materials, where these raw materials are located. Right, making sure that we have access to the inputs that we need, making sure that we have access to the technology and to the IP, not only to recover the inputs, but to also process this into battery grade materials and components, and then working with the manufacturing, you know, capabilities that we have at GM in our direct operations, but also our partners in various footprints around the world, creates this ecosystem, which really contributes to resilience, scalability, sustainability, and cost competitiveness of the entire value chain. And at the end of the day, this creates a product, a better product for our customers at a more affordable cost, right? And the customers are really at the center of everything that we do and where we're headed with this transition towards electrification. So, working with our partners, that collaboration is critical to enabling that.
Sharm, you mentioned in your opening comments the wake-up call nature of the pandemic. What keeps you up at night now? You know, where are the weaknesses? Where are the things that are of most immediate concern?
I think it's mostly in processing. If you look at, I'll take lithium, for example. Lithium, even though it's called rare earth, it's widely available across the world. U.S. has a lot of resources. Canada, our neighbor across the border, they have a lot of resources as well. Mexico has lithium resources. But if you look at, processing of lithium, we don't have that infrastructure in North America that exists today. And I can say the same thing about rare earth magnet materials. I could say the same thing about nickel and nickel sulfate. For example, precursor for the cathode material or the cathode material itself, all these processing infrastructure is non-existent almost in North America and mostly.
Why is that? Go ahead, please.
I think we did not spend the resources that were necessary in the early days to establish this the ecosystem. I think we have a lot of. If I talk to some of my, companies that we work with, they say we have the talent in the U.S., but the talent hasn't been deployed towards processing of these critical minerals for the EV industry. That talent is deployed maybe in the petrochemical industry because you need chemical engineers, chemical processing engineers to make this all happen. So we have the talent, but it's not deployed towards the EV mineral processing.
John, if I can, I think that this takes us back to an issue that you and I have discussed before, which is this perspective that we had here in the United States, in many countries, until quite recently, that we would do things where it was cheapest to do them. And it was absolutely fine if we had lithium processing in China, because, we could always import it from China. Why would we want to do that sort of lower value add, dirtier aspect of things, which are more complicated to do here in the United States? And it turns out that, in fact, we're highly vulnerable when that happens. And so, now we've reevaluated that, and there are a lot of efforts to bring that kind of capacity, not just here to the United States, but of course, to our friends and allies. So we are nearshoring, we're ally shoring, we're friend shoring, and adopting this more, sort of a tighter international approach. It's not about multilateralism necessarily right now. It's more about saying, okay, where can we actually achieve these economies of scale? Where can we lower cost at the same time as we're guaranteeing our security of supply?
Jasper, go ahead, please.
Sorry, John. I just wanted to add to that point. I fully agree with what Duncan and Sharm are saying. And I think really the we is not just about GM. It is the collective we when we talk about, where the gaps are, where the opportunity is on the human capital side, the technical input side, the resource side. I think all of this is, GM is doing a lot in this space, but we can't do this overnight and we can't do this on our own, right? There are huge, significant challenges that Duncan outlined, right? I mean, both from a political sense and Sharm from the commercial sense, that I think, some of the work that the Wilson Center is doing and some of the work that we're all doing with a number of partners across multiple sectors need to address, but there's still a lot more work to be done.
With that in mind, Jasper, if I could get you to comment on, that balance between public and private, what's the role of government? What would you tell policymakers is the most useful thing that they can do to help America's industries?
I would say two things, being able to create certainty and being able to provide clarity, just in terms of when you look at governmental support, when you look at incentives, I think there's a lot of interesting platforms, I think, from the U.S. perspective. When you think about various subsidies, tax credits, whether it's the Inflation Reduction Act, whether it's the CHIPS Act, whether it's the infrastructure funding, there's a lot there that could be a potential catalyst going forward. But if you want to be that catalyst and maximize the benefit, we need that clarity, and we need it in a timely way in terms of how industry can maximize those benefits all throughout the value chain. I'd say also market access is important, diplomacy, working with our allies, working with our partners. I mean, that's been a big theme that's come up throughout this conversation. We can't do this overnight, and we can't do this on our own, as I said before, but I think really providing that stability and long-term predictability, not just for the development of domestic manufacturing and supply chains, but also those inputs that are critical, whether it's from Korea, whether it's from Canada, whether it's from other markets or strategic partners and allies, security allies around the world, we need to continue to build that even, you know, given some of the trends around geopolitics and international relations at this point. Now that is much more important than ever from an industrial perspective.
You know, one of the main reasons that this podcast exists is because the Wilson Center tries to see itself as a public service, and in this case, in a focused way, to our friends on Capitol Hill, whether they be elected members or staff. So along the lines of what Jasper was just describing, I want Sharman, Duncan, if you would like to join in and, you know, get inside the heads of policymakers. They got all kinds of priorities to juggle, this being one of them. Are there any other things you would add to the agenda that you think would be a most useful focus?
I mean, I think Jasper covered it really well in terms of certainty and, you know, ally shoring. I would also add, you know, we have a lot of funding agencies that are also trying to help some of these nascent companies, if you will, to establish roots in the U.S. Probably a clarity around how those funds could be made available to these companies and the speediness of those funds being available. That could also become extremely critical, because I think we are in a very critical juncture at the moment, because the next 5 to 10 years will determine whether EVs will take hold in the U.S. But if the infrastructure is not established in that time period, you know, things will become extremely expensive or unobtainable, right? If China decides to block, then we don't have any capacity to manufacture. So I think the next 5 to 10 years, like I said, will be really critical. And funding for these projects will also become extremely critical. And that's what we are seeing. I mean, we are willing to put money into many of these companies, but we don't have, you know, an unlimited balance sheet, if you will. We need somebody else to step in to help support these companies. And we think the government could play a huge role in that aspect.
Duncan, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I'm going to say two things here, John. I mean, the first one is that the importance of staying the course. You know, I think we've heard a lot in the press and the media in general recently saying, well, listen, the consumer uptake of electric vehicles hasn't been, you know, what a lot of people would have hoped for. It takes time to turn the ship around. It also takes time to actually, you know, build out the supply chain in a way that makes sense. It takes time for the new technologies to really, you know, bring those cost savings that we're looking for. So that's the first thing. I think that, you know, the long-term perspective is very, very important here. The second one is more of a celebratory point, which is, you know, we are so grateful that we have North America as our region, and the USMCA as a free trade agreement between the three countries of that region is just proven to be an enormous blessing. It's a way that we can take advantage of the complementarities of the three economies of the United States, Canada, and Mexico, where we can take advantage of the, you know, some of the advanced manufacturing, which is taking place now in Mexico at a lower cost. Obviously, the great expertise, design, et cetera, here in the United States and up in Canada. I mean, just by looking at that one element of critical minerals that was mentioned earlier on, you know, we are enormously grateful, I think, or we need to be enormously grateful that we have that kind of working relationship with the Canadians, not just on critical minerals. Of course, we have a long-standing relationship on the auto sector there. But that kind of cooperation is something that very few other countries around the world can benefit from. And it's really something that we need to not just protect, but nurture.
A wise old 60 Minutes producer taught me that when a layperson speaks to experts on a complex topic that your final question should always be, is there anything we haven't spoken about today that you think is important for people to know, since we can't rely on my expertise to guide us down that path? So in terms of a closing thought, is there anything we haven't touched on today that you think is really important to keep in mind as people process the complexity of this topic? And we can draw straws. Who'd like to begin? Let's do it. We'll do it in order of introduction. Duncan, we'll put the pressure on you to go first, and we'll let our guests bat cleanup.
Thanks, John. I think it's a really important question, because we never get the full picture. And part of the reason for that is what I'm going to say, which is we talked about the complexity of the supply chain, the complexity of the problem. There's also moving goalposts, as it were. You know, what was the situation 3 years ago is not the situation today. Both the geopolitical realities of the world are different, as well as the economic fundamentals and the economic realities, not to mention the political and electoral cycle, which comes around again and again. So the fact is that, you know, the assumptions that we had 3 years ago are not necessarily the assumptions that we need to use today. And the impact of what we do is going to be very different based upon how those assumptions have changed. So I think that, you know, keeping up to date, making sure that policymakers understand how this issue is evolving, is of fundamental importance in the work that the Wilson Center and other think tanks do.
Okay, thank you. Jasper, you're up.
Yeah, I would just add a couple of things as a closing thought, and focus more on why this is important and what's possible. I think you look at when we do this from a commercial sense, for all the reasons that we've talked about, but I think the underlying tenets are security and resilience, I think, are a critical driver of this. I think the economic benefits we've seen in terms of the projects that we've made, the domestic, and then also also the friend shoring element of the ally shoring element of it, in terms of the jobs and the investment and the growth that we've seen through many of the projects that we've been supporting throughout the supply chain. And the broader value chain. And I'd say lastly, competition, and this ties it back to a bit of security, but reinforcing manufacturing and technology leadership through EVs, through batteries, building up our own capability. It's really thinking about what's possible and being able to unlock that potential. Those are the key drivers, I think, when you couple those together with, of course, the sustainability benefits of looking at this, looking at throughout the EV and battery supply chain. But I think those are four things to kind of think about as to why we do it. But then you think about the economic opportunity that's unlocked and the jobs and the investment this creates going forward. I think it's a massive potential that we should continue to think about and keep in the back of our mind as we work through the complexities.
Glad you put a big highlighter on the security concern there, Jasper, too, because people often think of these things as termly and exclusively an economics discussion.
Absolutely.
And you're a few degrees away from it becoming way more than that. Yeah. Sharm, you get the last word.
Yeah, no, I think, thanks, John. I think in addition to what Jasper and Duncan said, and probably expanding on what Duncan said, staying the course, right? We think of the EV journey to be a continuous growth opportunity for the U.S., but we will see some bumps along the way, but that shouldn't dissuade us from, you know, continuing the efforts to make a local or sustainable value chain here in North America. Because it's a long journey, and we are, as a company, we are in it, all in, if you will. So we would like to stay the course and continue the journey.
Gentlemen, thank you for sharing your insights with us today. I learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners and viewers will as well. And for those of you interested in learning more, you can visit wilsoncenter.org or gm.com. We'll be back with another episode of Need to Know next week. Until then, for all of us at the Center, I'm John Molesky. Thanks for your time and interest.